B-Pod Studios.
No one says it like they do.
What do you mean?
Well, what do you mean?
Felger and Mads.
I'm just making it up. Totally making it up.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Tom, there's a report this evening that the Patriots have kicked some tires regarding Antonio Brown, who was with you for one game and then has not been with the team for quite some time. He issued an apology via Instagram earlier in the week to owner Robert Kraft for some of the words he said upon leaving the Patriots. Do you think there's any chance that Antonio Brown wears a Patriot uniform again this season?
I don't think those decisions obviously are up to me. You know, they're not up to me when we cut line players, and I think the people in the personnel department decide those things. So my job is to play quarterback, and that's what I'm trying to do as well as I possibly can.
All right, if the Patriots are really out on Antonio Brown, I do wonder how that affects Tommy's mood. It's just, and not that I care. Meaning, in other words, not that the team should care. If he's unhappy and they're winning 17-10, so be it, is what I mean. But it's interesting to monitor how he's feeling about the whole thing. He's not happy being 9-1. Amazing. Never thought I'd see the day. So we'll see if there's another rock fight football game on Sunday. If they win 17-10 again, is he going to pull that crap like he did last week? And now that he's been denied Antonio Brown, you know, apparently, reportedly, is that going to contribute to his mood? I don't know. But that thing where he says to Jim Gray, you know, I just work here. I'm not in the personnel department, blah, blah, blah. Apparently, the whole reason Mohamed Sanu is here versus Manny Sanders is that Brady wanted Sanu, not Sanders. Mm-hmm. So come on. You don't think here, especially at the end, that, you know, Brady's playing a role in this stuff?
Oh, I think he always has level.
Why Antonio Brown's here in the first place?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, on some level, now over the years, has it increased? You know, does he get more of a say than he had initially? Sure. Yes. So I'm not saying as, you know, back in 2003, he was getting a say on who they were going to bring in to play with receiver the way he does now. But, he wants him back and he doesn't want to say it.
Okay, Agenda Free Friday brought to you by the Bernardi Auto Group. Catch him at BernardiAutoGroup.com. We'll zip through as many calls as we can here before we get to Soucy and his hot takes. Cam and Taunton, give us a thought quickly.
Hey, Maz, a lot of people call you guys up to rub stuff in your face you got wrong. Here's someone you got right. Jacoby Ellsbury, 7 years, $152 million for the Yankees. Got them 520 games played. 39 home runs, 198 RBIs, and a batting average of .264. That's an average of 86 games played a year, 6.5 home runs and 33 RBIs, and he started one playoff game for a guy everybody thought was the second coming of Fred Lynn because he stole home and had one great season. So take your victory lap.
Yeah, listen, you know, to me, that was an easy one. It was an easy one for the Red Sox, too. I'm not going to sit here and tell you. There were a million people that felt like I felt. Everyone except Danny from Quincy. Danny, hello. Danny, you out there? Please call in. I'd love to talk today about Jacoby Ellsbury. Just quickly, let me add the story that's out there now. The Yankees trying to recoup the $26 million they owe him. And not only that, but some of the money they paid him the last couple of years. This is going to get ugly. This is an ugly story.
What's their case?
That he went to a doctor that was not authorized by them and some quack in Atlanta who's doing all kinds of radical therapies.
Got it.
And, you know, I don't know if they're going to get their money back or not, but they are clearly pissed at the player and the agent if they were going after the money.
Ernie and Revere has a Patriots thought for us. Hi, Ernie.
Hey, how you doing? You know, the reason why Brady's upset is he knows that when you get in a game with, like, Baltimore, Kansas City, maybe even Dallas, you're going to have to, your rock fight's going to be putting points on the board. And you know what? If they double down on that old man and put a safety on White, who are you throwing to?
Hey, Ernie.
Who are you going to get a fourth down and three that you're going to give them? There's no Gronk to give it to. There's no Edelman because he's doubled. There's no Amendola. You could have got him back for a song and a dance. There is nobody.
Hold on, Ernie. Maz has got a question for you.
Ernie, I was just going to ask you, what game has their offense cost them this year?
What game? Oh, well, they didn't look that great in Baltimore.
Yeah, they gave up 37. I'd say the defense lost them that game.
Well, the offense gave up 7 of it.
Okay, but still, the defense gave up 30. So all I would say is this a team that can win now giving up 30?
Tough. Against a certain team, they could. I think they could beat Kansas City giving up 30.
Okay, but generally speaking, we can all cite specific examples.
Right.
If they gave up 30, are they going to win?
No, not on a weekly basis, no.
Okay, so they're built to win on defense. So the reason that, like, he cited the Baltimore game, the only reason that, this is the only reason I jumped on his throat a little bit, that the defense lost the Baltimore game. That was a defensive loss.
Yeah.
And I'm not telling you, look, Edelman had a big fumble in that game. But that isn't a function of being able to, a function of being able to not move the ball, right? That was Edelman. Now, you can say it was a function of feeding Edelman, and he was exhausted.
But once they went to the hurry-up, they were actually moving the ball pretty well.
They lost that game because of their defense.
Yeah, I mean, I'd put the defense first. I wouldn't say – I think that was a full team loss. But the point is that you're going to win a different way this year, Ernie. And – you're still winning at an exceptionally high level, and you're still the best team in the league as you're currently constituted. Apparently, that's not good enough for you, or more importantly, the quarterback. Joe in Melrose. Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, guys. How you doing? I think you're all crazy. I definitely want AB back. I mean, he makes your team better. Edelman doesn't get doubled. I mean, the Baltimore game in particular, the other team puts up 30 points on you. You have to be able to respond, and right now they can't. I mean, if Edelman didn't have that pick six, they could have won that Baltimore game with someone like AB on the field.
Joe, it's...
And the other thing is... go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, you're obviously right, but you're just leaving out the fact that he has a ticking time bomb and a flaming, complete asshat.
Well, 1 year, I mean, you're better with him than without him. I mean, like, right now you're without him. You're better with... I mean, the thing is, Green Bay plays San Francisco later on. Imagine, like, playing Jimmy G in the Super Bowl, and you lose 24-13 because your offense can't respond. I mean, what's everyone going to say about Tom Brady then?
No, that's on the defense. If you give up 24 points to that hack, you deserve to lose.
But that is the nightmare scenario. You actually lose to Garoppolo. Oof, that's especially for Murray. That's a tough one over there.
I'm not worried about that.
Or you lose a game like 17-16.
Right.
Like that would be a hard one to take.
We've got Brandon in Waltham with a hockey thought. Yes, Brandon.
Sagar, your takes on hockey are usually bad, but the worst one you've had recently is the Weber-Subban trade. You went on and on. Oh, what is Montreal doing? How dare they trade Subban? He's a superstar. Well, look at some actual stats, not your bad opinion. This year, 20 games, Subban has 5 points. 22 games, Weber has 17 points. New Jersey's a basement team. The Canadians are looking like a playoff team. And let's go back last year. Weber outperformed Subban and played less games.
So I'm sorry.
How bad that deal was, but it was a good deal for Montreal.
Horrible deal. The one piece that I picked out of there is, I'm sorry, Montreal's what, like a playoff team?
They're built like a playoff team.
No. Wait. No. You didn't say built. There's another thing that you said. Oh, you said looking like a playoff team. Looking, because that's all that they've done since they've traded PK Subban is look at the playoffs. They look at them. They've been out of the playoffs since that trade, I believe. I think they missed it the last 2 years. Or since they got Claude. So we can go a couple different directions here if you like. But the arrow on the Canadians since that Subban trade, why don't you go back and check your facts and see what that team has done since that trade happened.
Okay, how do you feel about the arrow on Subban?
Okay, so fair enough. But what has Weber done for the Montreal Canadiens?
No. I'm just talking
on a much worse contract.
So I'll just say about Subban, I don't know what's happened to the guy.
He used to be so good. Now it's like he's preoccupied with Lindsey Vonn.
Yeah, maybe that's what made him seriously
cool. Yeah.
Nothing can take a guy off his game like a woman.
I'm not joking. I'm just Googling Shea Weber contract. You know, at least the Predators and now the Devils, they can get out from this. I'm not exactly sure what Subban's contract is. It might not be great, but it ain't. Do you know what Shea Weber's contract is?
Oh, he has a massive one too.
14 years. $110 million?
His was huge. They were both huge deals.
No, good move, Montreal. That was great. Great deal. Tremendous.
I mean, you trade
for a 34-year-old guy on a $110 million contract, and you haven't made the playoffs since. No, you're right, caller. You got me on that one. Woo-wee. Am I wrong about that?
I mean, Nashville is now happy to be rid of both of them. Like, they're happy to be rid of Weber and of Subban.
Matt in Framingham, what do you got for us today?
Hi, guys. Listen, I have a very simple question for you. Can we just get rid of replay?
Yes.
Can we just abolish replay?
I'd love to.
Between the fact that on Wednesday night, the Celtics-Clippers replay took about as long as Black Friday shoppers to a Walmart, and the fact that last night during the football game, with less than 2 minutes left, it looked like one of the Texas players fumbled, and it looked like a Colts player recovered.
Right, I saw that too.
All of a sudden, yeah, and I'm sitting, waiting for the both of you. No, both of you. What the hell's going on here, people?
Not only that, Matt, I'm going to cut you off because I don't need to do my replay rant for the 800th time, but did you see this last night?
Yeah, this thing was shady as hell. It was Deshaun Watson. He goes down. He fumbled it out. Darius Leonard basically took it right out of his breadbasket.
So
I heard about this. I haven't seen it yet.
Botch clocks all over the place. Like, it starts with Indy stupidly going for it on fourth down when they had three timeouts and the two-minute warning at midfield. Okay, like 3 minutes left. They were at fourth and seven. They had three timeouts and the two-minute warning, and they decided to go for it. But it took Frank Reich, who I like, so long to make up his mind that they had to call a timeout. So they burnt a timeout, and then they go for it, and they don't get it. So now all Houston has to do is run out the clock, and they're running read option stuff with Watson. He hands it off. This is a keeper. So Watson keeps it. And again, they're just, you know, Indy's burning their timeouts, and they're just taking the clock down to nothing. On one of the runs, Watson, at the end of it, I thought clearly got stripped by Darius Leonard.
Yeah.
And they didn't. It's a booth review situation. They never stopped it. The play clock's going down. I'm like, is New York going to stop this? Is New York going to stop this? They never do. And then numbnuts, Bill O'Brien calls a timeout. So again, Houston fumbled the ball. Bill O'Brien called a timeout, which gave New York another 2 minutes to look at the thing because they were running out of time to look at it. I thought, okay, they just didn't get it in time. But then Bill O'Brien called a timeout, which gave New York more time to look at the thing. I'm like, well, they're going to bring this back now, or they're going to give it to Indy. And they never did. They never even looked at it.
Yeah,
could it be that they blew the play dead?
No, there was really no explanation for it. And even Buck and Aikman, like, seemed confused. I thought they were maybe should have lost their minds, but probably just wanted to get out of there at that point because time was running out and the game was ending. But it looked like a clear fumble. It should have got looked at.
Oh, my God. It was clearly out.
I'll say just real quick, I don't know if you watch that game in its entirety, both those teams are complete pretenders.
Pretenders.
Pretenders. Felt the same way. I checked out of that game about not quite two-thirds of the way through.
I mean, I'm sorry. Houston at home, after making all those trades, Deshaun Watson at his height, and they got to go.
Their offense feels like a tractor pull.
It does. It really does.
Every single time.
Down to the wire tractor pull with a team still with their backup quarterback. You know, it's like, and I think Indy's a decent all-around team, but
they can't really throw the ball. I think they're 22nd overall.
I mean, not only that, Houston got run over.
Houston should be so much better than they are. They're still just another, you know, just another AFC South wannabe, you know, mediocre 9-6. I mean, that's how they feel to me.
Yeah, but no, I agree. After that game last night, I was thoroughly unimpressed by the two teams. I told you, I checked out about two-thirds of the way through. I said, that's it, I'm done.
But I'm just about the overall arc of the Texans. That is, they should be so much better and more dynamic. And I mean, again, Watson,
that team should average like 28 points a game or something.
Hopkins is in there. Fuller's in there. They're throwing all these bombs. Like, the guy's all over the place.
Indy should be embarrassed that they lost that game, though.
What was the score? 23-20 was a three-point
2017.
2017.
And all they did was give up long passes. Indy, that's all they did was give up long passes in the game.
All right, so anyway, we continue with an Agenda Free Friday and your calls and hot takes coming up right after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Boys and girls, I'm here today to present an exciting opportunity for togetherness.
Felger and Mass.
That's awesome.
Of course it is.
That's great.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Listen up,
it's
Boston.
It's time for Hot Sports Takes.
Say hello to my little friend.
Bob Sosie. Yeah!
My little friend is here to say hello.
Smoking Bob Sosie, sizzling Bob Sosie, and his hot takes.
Scorching Bob Sosie, smoking Bob Sosie, and his hot takes.
It is time now for Hot Sports Takes with Bob Sosie, brought to you by Coors Light, the official beer of football Sundays. Coors Light, mountain cold refreshment made to chill.
Say hello to my lips!
Out. Outstanding. Hi, Robert.
Hi, Michael. Hi, Tony.
What do we got on our list today here, Paul? We got our pad of paper.
First thing I want to say, it was really great for you guys to help set me up, give me a boost before I came in. There's this yellow pillow on my chair. Don't worry, Zoe. I'm sitting on the live read side and not the sleeping side. I want a full explanation.
You're going to get you a couple of phone books, Bob.
Or a milk crate. What's on the list?
Well, you tell me what's on your pad of paper.
For the radio audience, Zoe apparently has a pillow that he keeps in studio. And one side is for the intern to put live copy, commercial copy on. The other side is for Zoe to put his head on in between commercial breaks.
Exactly.
So, what's on the list?
What's on your list?
Well, look, I heard you say on the way in here, and it goes back. Look, I think I tweeted out yesterday something I felt all week long, that a lot of the conversation in the wake of the press conference in particular after Sunday's game has been justified, has been warranted, and some of it has been unfounded. And going back, rewinding to the moments after Sunday's game with the Patriots winning over Philadelphia 17-10, I was sitting in the second row of the press conference, and I know how Brady sounded. I know how he looked to the rest of us. To me, he looked like he'd just gone 12 rounds with Apollo Creed, if not 15. And you know, sitting there and listening to him and looking at him, he was truly beaten up, and obviously he was frustrated and didn't handle himself in the minds of many, if not most, in the best of ways. And I think probably as indicated yesterday by his appearance midweek and the way we heard him last night, there's been a change in tenor and tone over the course of the week. But a couple of thoughts and observations from that game and maybe
why he's... Probably just played for 3 hours, so everyone's a little tired. Probably just played.
He was tired.
Yeah, but I, looking back at that game, I think that it's a mischaracter. Well, I can't say this because I haven't spoken to him specifically about it. But rather than characterizing it as he doesn't like the way they're winning, I think the best way to characterize it is there might be some concern with the way they won that game. And I certainly had it walking out of the booth. They won a game by a touchdown in which they went 1-for-3 in the red zone to dip below 50% for this season. They got the ball at midfield twice, and out of those two possessions ran 7 plays for 1 first down. And the Philadelphia Eagles, as much as the Patriots defense dominated from that second series on and as well as the Patriots special teams played, there's still a pass through the hands of Nelson Agholor in the back of the end zone with 1 minute and 5 seconds left away from kicking an extra point to tie the game. And I would think that a player who demands perfection of himself and his teammates, and an experienced veteran who's been through however many championship drives, really 18 of them over the course of the last 19 years, looks at that and says, you know, we're going to have to be better than that. And it's, to me, it's like a team with a great closer and saying, you know what, we can leave the bases loaded in the 7th or 8th inning because we got a great closer time and time again. You leave runners at 2nd and 3rd in the 7th. You leave runners in the with the bases loaded in the 8th. You might be able to win that game in late August. Are you going to win that game in mid-October?
Do you think their offense is good enough to win a championship with, given the defense and the road and
I think a lot of it depends on the matchups and where the matchup occurs.
In Foxborough?
In Foxborough against Baltimore. And, you know, unless there's improvement, it's going to be a really difficult challenge. Maybe even a Kansas City in a divisional round if the Chiefs get their act together. But I think the Patriots are going to improve. Now, this week is going to be difficult because of the injury to Dorsett last week in Sinu, understanding it as we speak that we don't really know about their availability and the extent of their availability this Sunday. But I still think that, you know, given his track record, here's a guy that's, I mean, who can question his commitment to winning throughout his career? Whatever you think of, you know, the branding off the field and some of the things he has said, especially, you know, as we do on the station each week with Jim Gray in those interviews and whatnot, as we parse the words and we try to, you know, split hairs. But look at the product on the field. And when accountability is needed on the field, and for me, it really starts when he shows up to the facility after, you know, whatever mood swing might have occurred. He was sullen on Sunday. Yesterday he was upbeat. How was he on the practice field? And how is he going to be this Sunday, more importantly? He's certainly proven over the course of his career that he's been a great teammate. I've never heard anybody as a current or former teammate from a practice squatter to an all-pro say he's not, including Michael Bennett, by the way, just the other day with the Dallas media.
So, Bob, I just want to rewind for a second because you said that is it your feeling that he was hurt or beat up after that game?
Well, I certainly think that that's probably part of it. I mean, look at a couple of first of all, they're designing sprint outs early in the game. I mean,
they were terrified of the Philly defensive line.
They were terrified of the Philly defensive line.
Too much so, if you ask me.
Perhaps. You know, with and we always say you go back to certain games over the course, even like last year at times Pittsburgh. You know, we dissected every throw and how it appeared as though he was bailing out. Quarterbacks get sped up, and usually when Tom is not at his best, he's been sped up and antsy back there. And I think there are some times when you go into a matchup as a player, at least it would seem to me. I've never been out on an NFL field, but there's a sense that you know what. You've been around long enough. You know where the trouble lies, and you know where the strength resides on the other side of the line of scrimmage. In that game, he got high-load early. Derek Barnett ran around Marshall Newhouse, and Newhouse is doing the best he can, but he is what he is. And Barnett ran around him untouched, ran right through the back of Brady just as Gary was coming in low. There's the one sack that the Eagles had where Gary's coming from the second level. It's a five-man rush. And he runs straight ahead unencumbered to the quarterback. So, you know, there were a lot of things that had gone right. And this is not
Bob, you're definitely right. Brady is definitely the only guy in the league who gets hit.
No, Mike, I didn't say that.
Poor fella.
I didn't say that.
It's amazing how the other 31 guys don't have to deal with that stuff.
When did I say that? The demand, but has he ever shown that he demands anything less than almost unreachable standards for himself and his teammates? And I'm not excusing, by the way, the appearance and the tone or the tenor of Sunday night, but I don't think it's what I'm really trying to say is I don't think it's because he doesn't like the way they're winning.
You were saying cut him some slack.
I don't think it's because he doesn't want to be a game manager. There's never been a better game manager in the history of the NFL, at least the modern history, than Tom Brady. He's managed the game in every situation better than anybody else, whether he was a young quarterback in 2001 or a record-setting quarterback in 2007 or a Super Bowl winning quarterback a year ago. He was content to hand it off time and time again late last season if that was the formula to win and get them where they wanted to go. The other part of it is, for me as well, with some of what I've read, is that when he went into the – now, maybe afterwards, there's thoughts about the future and his contractual situation. To me, sitting there, that's the last thing I would have expected when he walks into that press conference room after the game on Sunday, that he's thinking in those moments, frustrated by his performance, by the offense's performance, about his contract and his future.
Okay, so he, again, the only one that doesn't think about money?
No, in those moments. Don't, that's not what I said.
Well, cut him some slack is the whole point of your take, which is fine. I mean, he deserves the benefit of the doubt after what he's done over the last 20 years.
What I'm saying is,
but he's also a human being.
His attitude has to get better, Bob.
It does.
His attitude has to get better.
There's no doubt about it.
Because the offense will never get out of it if his attitude doesn't get better. This is the issue.
And do you think, based on what you saw and heard from him yesterday at Gillette, and more so, I think, what we heard from him last night, that there has been a realization?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
I don't know. I need to see it on Sunday, and I need to see it Sundays repeatedly on the field. Because, again, when Myers, you know, runs the wrong route, Brady rolls his eyes like, you know, look, he's Tom Brady. He'll fight through it. Okay, he'll fight through it. But I do think it affects some of the other guys on the team, the younger guys in particular.
Bob, 30 seconds. We're running out of time.
Well, one of the things to consider, too, I mean, and I'm not saying that we don't know how he is in the facility. We were with Jarrett Stidham a couple weeks ago for an event. The impression I got from him is that, you know, he's having a great experience trying to learn and observe from Tom Brady. So, and Jimmy Garoppolo and Jacoby Brissett, as much as what was made of the lack of interactions during games at times on the sidelines, they have certainly shown that they benefited from their experience in Foxborough where they are now. Tough game on Sunday afternoon. I don't know how the Cowboys are 6-4. And now they won't have Van Der Esch for this weekend. That's a big loss. Their defense hasn't played up to its talents personnel overall, but Quinn's having a very good year. There's always Lawrence, of course, on that defensive line. The speed of Van Der Esch is critical from the linebacker level in the passing game, with the backs in particular.
Give me one key matchup.
The Patriots have got to get the backs involved in this game. I think the Patriots are going to have to. The defense has its hands full in this game. I think the most difficult matchup overall, conventionally speaking, Ravens was a tough matchup. The uniqueness of the offense is a big part of that. With the three receivers Dallas has, the two backs, Pollard's coming on, catch the ball, they line him up in the slot. You got to be able to cover him. But I think it really starts, if the Patriots can run the ball, then they've got to get the running game going. They've got to find a way. Maybe Isaiah Wynn helps. But to me, a vulnerability perhaps with Dallas is if the Patriots can run the ball a little bit and get that going. But I think they're going to win. I mean, the Cowboys will play, to me, to the competition generally on the road. They're 2-6 the last 2 years outside the NFC East on the road, one of those wins being the victory last week over Detroit. A very talented team. Prescott's having a great year. I think the Patriots will emerge.
Okay, Bobby, thanks for coming in, as always.
See you, Bob.
All right,
thank
baby.
You guys.
We will see you. We probably won't see you next week. Have a great Thanksgiving.
Hey, thanks. You too.
You and yours.
You too. Just, despite my low-sifting rant. Have a wonderful holiday, guys. Thanks.
You too. Here's Murray's update. We're right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Boston's home for sports. Filger and Mez, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
It's Agenda Free Friday. Everything is on the table. As promised, Chet has been waiting patiently in Somerville. Thanks for hanging on, Chet. What do you got?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. So the Patriots have clearly been struggling on offense. It'll be good to have Isaiah Wynn back so that stinkbag Newhouse will be off the field. But I don't think they have enough weapons at wide receiver to win it all. I think the Patriots made a mistake letting Cordarrelle Patterson walk. The guy's an elite kick returner, could play running back, receiver. I think he made our offense a little more dynamic, and he was never a locker room circus clown. When you're a team who's always playing in Super Bowls and AFC title games, Patterson is the kind of guy who can make a play, lightning in a bottle.
Okay, Chad, I'll stop you there.
Wasn't a locker room pain in the ass. I mean, not like a bad guy, but he was kind of a pain in the ass. He started making T-shirts after he had that return in Chicago last year. He's a me-first type of guy. Thank God he's gone.
It's the first Cordarrelle Patterson call we've gotten, though.
They don't miss him. Please.
He's done nothing for the Bears. Nothing. Nothing.
I don't think he makes a lick of difference.
You know what?
I really don't.
Now, the one thing I do want to look up is where they are in kick returns. Because, you know, in theory, if you're going to be a defense and special teams team, you should have a kick returner.
Yeah.
So, now, my sort of off the top of my head, I think Bolden's been fine at it. But I don't feel like he's going to break one either.
But, okay, so to the caller's credit, as a punt returner, now you're using Mohamed Sanu, and he gets hurt doing it last week. So, okay, yeah, you could maybe use a return. So I'll give you some credit there, but at the money he went for, please.
I don't think he makes any difference on your offense. I don't. Steven Carver with the Bruins thought. Hi, Steve.
Okay, two quick things. Number one, how come when Big Jim Murray says he wants to wait until the end of the playoffs to make his final conclusions on Jimmy Garoppolo, you say, oh, I have a daily talk show to fill. But with the Bruins, we have to wait till the end of the second round? Mike, that's in 6 months.
Well, no. I mean, I'm going to cover them in the meantime. But in terms of me fully believing, I need to see it in the second round of the playoffs.
All right, I was just kind of giving you crap. Anyway, my main point is, have you been following what the Bruins' main competitors have been doing? The Tampa Bay has less points than the Ottawa Senators, and the Leafs fired the head coach. And they might have a fire sale. The Penguins are crap. And Evgeny Malkin has some lawsuit going on where he might get suspended. So every time I turn on the Bruins, they're winning games. They're going to have home ice in the playoffs. And all their competitors suck. It's not like last year. Really, they only have to worry about Washington, which is obviously a big deal. But there's no really other teams, and they're going to have home ice. Like, the road is lining up for them.
Let me stop you, Steve. Thank you for the call. It is an interesting landscape right now in hockey. You talk about U.S. Thanksgiving, the standing solidifying. If they solidify on U.S. Thanksgiving, Toronto's out and Tampa's out. Now, Tampa has played the fewest amount of games in the league. I think they got like 3 games in hand.
Yeah, the Bruins have played 3 more. Most teams, yeah.
Right, they have 3 games less than most teams. So I think that if you gave Tampa wins in those 3 games, they would be above the line, but they're close. Toronto's out. Toronto's played the most games in the league and they're out. So that's interesting. Right now, Montreal and Florida are in. Buffalo was sniffing it. So that whole landscape has changed, and that whole other division is really sort of meh, except for the Capitals, who look like they're back. And I'm sorry, that you got to include that in the road. If you're facing the Capitals, are your nemesis.
Scary.
Okay, so the Capitals are scary right now. But other than that,
Islanders are pretty good.
It doesn't, I don't, you know.
They've won a lot, but they got bounced last year.
Great regular season team. Barry Trotz is their coach. He did that in, you know, he finally won one with the Capitals, but he was notorious for just, you know, grinding them to a pulp in the regular season and not really doing anything. In the postseason, I don't think the Islanders are that formidable. They're going to win regular season games because of their coach. It doesn't. Last year, you looked at the landscape, you're like, oh, God, Murderers Row, and then they all lost. The conference looks weaker this year. It does. Or new teams. Like, I don't care how Florida, how well they're playing. They don't scare me. And you know, if Buffalo somehow makes it, like, bring that on.
I mean, the Bruins could have had last year Toronto, Tampa, and Washington on the way to the Cup.
Right.
And instead, they got Columbus and Carolina. Like, so they totally lucked into it. The team that needs the fire sales is, I don't know if he said the Leafs, if that's what he meant.
Yeah, well, they fired the coach, so let's see what that looks like.
I mean, they got to bring in some D there, I think. Like, that team is top-heavy.
But
anyway.
What they're hoping for is that you fire the coach and have the same thing that happened last year to St. Louis. So let's. But again, that's a whole, like, Toronto could go either way. They could figure it out and catch fire and get, you know, lightning in a bottle with the new coach, or they could be out.
Washington's a really bad matchup for the Bruins if it comes out. It's a really bad matchup. They're big. They're good. It's a bad matchup.
Here's KJ in Fall River on Maz's opening take. Go ahead, KJ.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Where is Chris Sale? And honestly, I have one quick question. Do you think that maybe he's injured and that they're not saying anything because they're just trying to sell more season tickets and more tickets, and they're not going to rule him out until after all this?
Well, there's another one.
So interesting. Yeah, so I thought he was going to say, I didn't think about the tickets. I thought of it from the standpoint of, like I said to you earlier, what good does it do him to hide this? And maybe it's because they know that if he's injured, teams will hold him up on the trade market.
Yeah, well, so this is what I'm saying. Like, if, you know, they're going to want his medicals and you won't be able to hide anything, but...
No, but what if they're not trading him? In other words,
what if they're trying to acquire pitching?
And now Sale's out. Now it's like, oh no, you're not. You need pitching bad. We want more.
They lose leverage if they put him under the knife.
Right.
Teams are saying now you are desperate for us.
Right. Yeah. See, I was looking at it from the vantage point of how it relates to Sale. Like, if Sale's hurt, no one's taking him anyway. So what's the harm in announcing that he's hurt? And it's because maybe that they have to require pay. I didn't consider that.
Well, so
I'm an idiot.
Maz's opening take was that. When Chris Sale was originally shut down, they said, we'll know more in 6 weeks. It's now been 3 months and there hasn't been a peep. So do they know? What's the word?
They got to have an idea. They got to have an idea. And look, again, back when they were doing the GM search, Brian O'Halloran said that their expectation was that Sale would be ready at the start of spring training. But the way he phrased it was as of right now. So they at the time, either they didn't know or they weren't telling us, or they're hiding it because they're trying to make a deal for pitching. Maybe that's what it is, that they're trying to acquire pitching, and by indicating that Sale is hurt, it hurts their leverage.
Okay, long commercial-free segment is coming up. We've got everything on the board from the week. It's an agenda-free Friday, after all, so anything we've gotten to or have yet to get to, it is all up to you, and it continues right after this.
Boys and girls, I'm here today to present an exciting opportunity for togetherness.
Felger and Mass.
That's awesome.
Of course it is.
That's great.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Something?
I don't know. Google it, Maz.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app.
That's idiotic.
Now back to Felger and Maz on Boston's home for sports.
Smart now on the far side of the floor. Will trigger it. Side out of bounds. Celtics have to get a three to force another overtime. Inbound. Kemba turns. Fires. No good.
Kawhi
Leonard all through the shot. And the Celtics, for the second time in California, are beaten at the final buzzer. An extraordinary early season NBA game plays out in front of our eyes, and the Clippers are the last one standing. The final score, LA 107, Boston 104.
So again, agenda-free Friday. We definitely did some Celtics yesterday. It was a great ball game in LA the other night. Can talk about anything you want from that game. We had most of it yesterday, the Marcus Smart problem. Value add player, but boy, some of his offensive nights are just wretched. And it's not so much the percentage of shooting, it's the volume of shots. He keeps shooting even when it's not his night in key spots. What do you do about that? Talk about Tatum's great night. Stevens, I think, you know, that technical in overtime was just inexcusable. And then he let the game get away from Tatum in the fourth quarter. Again, in the fourth quarter, Marcus Smart had 7 shot attempts and Tatum, your best player, had 1. That can't happen.
Cannot happen. And the one was the one with 20 seconds left.
So,
or 13 or whatever it was.
That's on the
possession started with 20.
Yeah.
Yep.
Tough,
September.
Tough spot for them.
Yeah. This is a tough spot.
Right,
another good test.
The last game of those roadies can be hard.
Yeah, and one of the last games they played out there was that one where didn't Murray get like 49 and try to get 50 at the buzzer?
Yeah.
Remember that a-hole?
Yeah.
Like, so was that the last time they were out there?
Yeah.
It might have been, yeah.
Yeah, they lost both games from last year.
Okay, so your thoughts on everything. Matt in Bedford wants to weigh in on the Celts. Hi, Matt.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. So, Mike, I think you said, like, Smart had 7 shots compared to Tatum. One, that can't be happening. That dude can't hit a shot in a big moment. I don't know why Brad hasn't been like, dude, don't shoot, because it's never going to get any better. And I just want to get your guys' take on that. Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, Maz said that's all on Marcus Smart. I think it's on the coach, too, Maz. It is. Call a play, call a number, slow him down. Even without having to call a timeout, can you just, you know, you can call a play from the bench. You can set something up from the bench. You can give Marcus the stop sign. And I think he's got to intercede there a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. Look, again, if I said all on Smart, I didn't mean all. I'm just saying, let's not make Smart exempt either. You got better shooters on the floor and you're chucking up 11 threes, 1 for 11. Oh, holy crap. Like, talk about not being without a conscience.
Tony in the car, your thoughts on Antonio Brown and where that stands today? Tony!
Hey, what's going on?
What do you got?
Hey, if the Pats win the Super Bowl, does AB get a ring?
Fans love that question.
Oh, God, I hadn't even thought of that.
They're so concerned about who gets the ring, who doesn't.
And Josh Gordon, well, he played 11 games last year, so that makes more sense.
No, the example's Terry Glenn in 01.
Oh, right.
You know, who was the Antonio Brown of his time, came back and played like 1 or 2 games for you in 2001. I think he got one. So
I bet you they'd vote him in.
Oh, Brady for sure will give him, you know, Brady
will
give him his
sway, right?
Yeah, exactly. Gary in Rhode Island on the Maz's Hall of Fame ballot. Hi, Gary.
Yeah, hi. Quickly, I'll say this. I believe Tony's saying Jeter, Manny, and Bonds, they were like above everybody. I like Billy Wagner, and I like Fiskell. Fiskell matches up against Ozzie Smith.
Right.
So, I just tell me what you think.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm a big Fiskell guy. I love that guy. Loved him. I thought he was, you know, in Ozzie Smith's class. I don't know if you want to say he was his equal or not. I don't know, but he was in his class. And I guess the offensive numbers are as good if, you know, or, you know, this, I don't want to say like they were good offensive numbers, but they're also in Ozzie Smith's category.
Yeah, comparing him to Smith is fair. I'm just, you know, again, my argument always is I don't know that I would have voted for Smith. I don't think I'd vote for either one of them. So, and I'm not telling you it's a lock stock. No, they're worth consideration. I mean, they're both superior defensive players. Billy Wagner is a hell no to me.
Is that left-handed reliever?
Yeah.
Who was here at the very end that 1 year?
Yep.
Who would vote for that guy?
Not me. I vote for almost no closers anyway. To me, you have to be like unique or special.
Did you say yes to Mike Hoffman?
Trevor Hoffman.
For Hoffman.
No. Nope. I was a no on Trevor Hoffman. I think he had more saves than anybody.
Yeah,
other than you Rivera.
Do. I think he set the record.
Right. So I was a no on him. The only closers I think I've ever voted for are Rivera, Fingers. Fingers I didn't get to vote for, but I would have voted for Fingers. And Goose. I voted for Goose at the end. And I had to be swayed on him. I changed my mind on Goose. But other than that, closers generally can kiss my ass. I think I think it's one of the most overrated positions. And I think that saves, judging them by saves, are worthless. Rivera to me was the dominance. And Eck is another one.
Okay, Matt in the car. What do you got, Matt?
Hey, Felga. Hey, Maz. Hey, Michael, you're so handsome with those glasses. You look like a poor man's Clark Kent.
What do you got, Matt? What do you got other than that?
Sorry, gentlemen. I just got a quick AB take and a quick Celtics take.
Go.
At this point, with the way the offense is running, why can't we just sign AB? It's obvious Brady and the rest of the team wants him back. And also, I was looking to see, like, the Celtics should sign Jamal Crawford because he's a veteran presence and he adds depth to the backcourt as well as, you know, the shooting off the bench. Hold it.
Okay. Why do they need another shooter?
I'm not sure they do. They could use probably a little depth on the bench. I mean, I think that's where the Clippers had a decided edge over them in that game. And so, you know, could they use another guy?
The Clippers might be the deepest team in the league.
They are. They're good. They're good. I mean, they are. They can all play D and they can all shoot. That's what it feels like. Like, to me, that's the best team in the league. I don't know if record-wise it's going to come out that way or not. I've always loved Crawford. He slipped a little bit last year. You know, Crawford's like almost 40. He's as old as rope,
so,
for crying out loud. He's as old as dirt.
On Brown, the players, and Brady want him back. Well, of course they do. You can't listen to them. You can't listen to the players. Like, what? You start letting the players, you know, if you start letting them make good personnel decisions, you're port.
Yeah, no, you're screwed.
You're saying that
you'd have every hole in the league.
It just doesn't work that way. His comment line says, who put him up to the apology? Where did Antonio Brown's apology come from? And I do believe, whether the Pats have ever been serious about bringing him back or not, his whole strategy the last week I've talked about reeks of Patriots influence. Apologize to Robert, attack your accuser. That's just like sort of the Patriots playbook. You know, it starts with, you know, again, you know, paying your respects to Robert and making that whole. That has to happen. And generally the Patriots deny, accuse. So what does he do this week? He apologizes to Robert and attacks his accuser. And I'm sorry, I believe that was influenced in some way, shape, or form by the Patriots and or Tom Brady. And that's just not that Brady's crafting legal strategy. That would obviously be more of a Patriots thing. But the apology to Robert, Brady clearly would know, you know, Antonio, nothing gets done until you apologize to the old man.
Do you think there's any chance that the apology came up or came out of the meeting with the league?
Yeah, maybe that too.
And I say that, and again, I'm not disconnecting the Patriots from it.
But it came from the league. Wouldn't he have apologized to the league? Or and this is what's so preposterous.
Right, but he in his tweet specifically attacked Kraft.
Yes, okay, but in his previous employment, he specifically in real life, attacked his boss, tried to put fists to him, and called him a racist in front of the team. There was no apology to the Raiders. So something tells me if the league was telling him to apologize, the Raiders would have gotten a sniff too.
That's a good point.
And who, you know, one side comment about Robert and the Orchids thing versus attacking Mike Mayock, both physically and, you know, reputationally, and the playing the race card in front of the team and trying to fight him.
Okay, so when I said the league,
you know how much more egregious the behavior is?
Right, but when I said the league, I'm also sort of adding in that, and this is why I say not to disconnect the Patriots from it. What if Kraft says to Goodell, look, I want an apology out of this thing? Okay, so, you know, I don't want him attacking me publicly on Twitter or anything else. And I don't know, maybe it then comes up in the eight-hour meeting that they had last week.
Because it's important here. It is. That piece is important here. In the Raiders, are they just like, screw it. Guy's an a-hole. We don't care.
Probably.
Like, we'll just get on with our lives and not worry about, you know, worry about the optics of the PR and just screw him. He's done.
I mean, after it happened, they cut his ass. And what, all they had to pay him was $1 million or something, right?
Yeah, but it's like, I mean, if anyone deserves an apology, it's Mayock. That's the guy who deserves the apology. And it was great listening to you people mock Mayock and the Raiders for you know, them trying to get a grip on Antonio Brown. I don't know. Feels like they did a better job than you did. They didn't give him $10 million guaranteed. I enjoyed you all laughing at the Raiders during that time. And then you botched it worse. It turns out we have fresh puppets. We have fresh puppets. I want to tease it, Jimmy. Can we do it next segment?
They're good, too.
So we like playing it twice because it's worth it. Hardy and our video team does great work with this stuff. So we have fresh puppets. We want to run it twice. We'll do it next and in the final word. So that's coming up next with Casper. But first, a update with Murray. There's no commercials here.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.